Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be talking about a subject matter that is near and dear to anyone's heart that is involved in business. Today we are going through a down economy, as many people would describe it, and people are struggling. I was having a conversation with someone earlier today regarding business and how in the world can we pull things around so that we're going to have that bottom line giving us a better result than what we have been experiencing. Well, my guest today, Patricia Sigmund, is a woman who has quite a bit of experience in dealing with the world of business. She has put together a book, Six Steps to Creating Profit. This is a guide especially addressing the issues that small and mid-sized businesses that are service-based experience. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna.
I really appreciated your publication. I myself have been involved in a small business, and I know millions of Americans are. And in today's world, it has been so difficult for many of them to keep their heads above the financial mess that we are in, and they're struggling so hard. How is it that you got involved with money? What is your background? Why is it that you have such an interest in this?
Well, I started a computer consulting company almost 30 years ago. So for 28, 29 years, I have automated small to mid-sized businesses. As a result, I've been firsthand involved in well over 1,000 businesses.
And wow.
Face-to-face witnessed how hard it is for these businesses to make a profit. Over the years, I've looked for advice, I've looked for books, I've looked for publications that would address profit in small to mid-sized businesses, and it's hard to find. Go try to find it.
Mm-hmm.
The business books would be about the business, how to design a website, how to be an accountant, how to this, how to that. But how to make a profit, you can't find it. So I put all of these years of research together in a book, and I have been mentoring and consulting to business owners for the last 4 years about the tenets that are in this book.
Well, I found it extremely interesting. You make a statement, net income has to be put in the forefront of a business model. Profit making needs to be a leading factor in every business decision. And it needs to stay, you call it profit fever, needs to stay in the limelight. That's sometimes tough, depending on where you are, what you're doing. What is the biggest challenge you have found when you've first started interacting with a small business, especially when you're talking about net profits and gross profits and so on and so forth, because a lot of people will confuse those or get them mixed up?
Sure. The biggest problem is that most business owners do not have their arms around the real numbers. That's the biggest problem. They see cash coming in. They see money going out. There might be the cash flow if there's money in the bank, which has nothing to do with profit. And when you have the right numbers in front of an entrepreneur, they can make the right decisions. But until they have the right numbers in front of them, they really don't know what's going on.
Now, that's often pretty tough for the small business person who's just doing everything they can to bring in those dollars. And they're saying, wow, this is it. How can we look at it? Sales is the bottom line. Sales is something that everybody's got to do in one way or another. Without the sales, there's not a Santa Claus standing at your front door saying, ho, 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 here I'm going to give you $1.5 million this week. It just doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
How can someone work with this? Sometimes people are so good in their business, they really are super duper, but when it comes to sales, they stink.
Yeah. I mean, an entrepreneur, someone starting their own business, someone, a founder, usually they're good at something. They're passionate about what they're doing, painting, whatever it is they're doing. That's their forte. A lot of times they don't analyze the costs that are involved, and they think, you know, this is a good price, this is what the customer wants to pay. Maybe they'll get the sales by underpricing, and at the end of the day, at the end of the year, there's no money there. So that's not good. But there's a tendency for that. You know, you want to please the customer. You want to bring in the dollar. It's got to be about sales, but it's got to be about sales with a profit.
Well, lots of times, especially in today's world, you have people. I was talking with a woman that had gone to, she wanted to remodel her kitchen. Let me backstep a little bit. She wanted to remodel her kitchen. She was out doing some checking on prices, and she was quoted, I'll use a number, $20,000 to do this particular remodel job. She then found that there was another group that would do basically the same amount of work for half that price. So she, because of economics, naturally, is, and she had researched these people, they were licensed and bonded and all that kind of stuff, so she goes with this other group. This is something that we deal with. Competition is in the marketplace. It's what makes the marketplace healthy, in my view, is the competition. Someone may say to you, gee whiz, I'm charging this. If I charge any more, nobody's going to be there. How can you break that mentality? How can you shift into that other level?
Well, you have to have a value add. You have to be selling something for the proper value. But the other way to look at it is you can't spend more money than you have. I mean, maybe you can have a great big office and a whole suite of cars and cell phones and iPads and everything for everyone. If you know what you have to work to that number. You can't pay people what you don't have. You can't do anything with money that you don't have. So it's all a very tough finesse that has to be done around pricing. And some people don't like that kind of thought about pricing. They want to think what you could price the item as at regardless of the cost. But I'm saying look at the cost. You have to look at the cost because just to the opposite, people are pricing things where the costs are higher than the price of the item. That's not good unless it's a giveaway for future business, a loss leader, or something like that. But you know, if you know what the real number is, you'll make decisions on the back end that will help you make a better profit. You have to be lean and mean. The people charging half the price for the kitchen, well, why is that? Where is that money? Is there real money there that's going to foolish things and big cars and, you know, things that you don't want to be contributing to? But
that's a very good point.
Yeah, it's all about being lean and mean and being competitive.
I agree with that. Vertical versus horizontal selling. To tell my audience what that is and what is the difference.
Yeah. Well, a vertical market, a lot of companies, like I was in, I've been in computers for many years, so there might be a computer company that might sell to doctors or lawyers. So a doctor or a lawyer is going to look for a computer company that has experience with doctors. So that's a vertical market. You'll have the doctor market, the accountant market, the restaurant market. That's a vertical market. However, horizontal market might be maybe you're selling computer equipment. The equipment could be sold to anyone, no matter who they are, the same old equipment, the same hardware, going to anyone. That's a horizontal market. So everyone's using the same equipment. Well, you can market yourself differently for the person that's buying from you. You can market yourself as the people that sell computer equipment to everyone, which is what you might do, or you can market yourself as the people who sell computer equipment to doctors, even though there's nothing special about doing that for the computer equipment, or telephones, or things that are, you know, stock that are not proprietary to that industry. So you have to put a different face on yourself to attract a customer base and market that way. It's all a pretty package that you're selling.
One of the steps when you're talking about someone who is in small business, the entrepreneur, you say you've got to streamline the administration. And the very first step you recommend would be to automate everything possible. to use that as much as possible and to outsource non-client-specific tasks. Like if you needed a bookkeeper, you have a bookkeeper. If you needed a housekeeper or someone to clean your facility, then you get that. You really want, like you said, to be lean and mean.
Yes.
And I think that that's extremely important.
Well, business owners in the last few years have been kicked around. And if you had a good business and you had it for 20 years or 10 years or 5 years and you had a lot of fluff there, well, guess what? The fluff had to go away in the last several years. There was no room for it. And if you are working hard to get sales and the money is coming in the door, the last thing you want to do is throw it away. You have to find ways to keep it. Keep it safe, invest it in your business, but don't throw it in the garbage. That's silly. So, and we all do it. We've all done it. We do it at home. Maybe you don't go to the best price supermarket or whatever it is that you do. So you have to make the decisions that you have to make. But as far as management costs, there is a lot of area to look at where maybe in the past you didn't have to, like telephone services. Everyone knows that you can bargain with the telephone companies. You can get different services, cell phone, internet. Well, years ago, you would do that once, and you would never do it again. There are still businesses that have the same services that they signed up for years and years ago that haven't looked at those things.
Mm-hmm.
Now's the time to look at them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that is something that I myself just recently did because of a particular package I had. And someone had mentioned to me for a good year, my goodness, why don't you shift out of this and out of that? Well, it wasn't until there was an actual assessment of the telephone bill itself, which almost looks like a mini phone book every time it comes in every month. And I looked at it and I went, okay, this is not justified anymore. I can do this. And it decreased the phone bill by about $100.
Yes.
And that doesn't sound like
shocking.
A whole bunch. Yeah, it really
does
make a difference. Now, let's talk about increasing credentials, because this is something that in our world today, I hardly meet anyone who is, quote unquote, in a professional environment. Blue collar, white collar, doesn't make any difference. It doesn't say, my goodness, I've got to go back to school. I've got to go back to school. Mm-hmm. But it's one anymore. The educational costs are going through the roof. Number two, if an employer or an individual working for someone wanted to get their credentials, they may not have a whole bunch of time where they can go and sit in a classroom, and they might be even a more mature individual, but that's not even relevant. It's just if you have to work for a living and then have to take the schooling and training, and like I said, costs are going through the ceiling. What would you recommend to someone? Because keeping updated, whether it's computers, medicine, law, you have to have an ongoing education. What would you recommend?
Well, it has to happen in some industries. If you're going to an accountant and you want a CPA, you want a CPA. That CPA has to go and take his tests and take continuing education courses. I mean, it has to be. And what I'm saying, if you are a CPA, wear that on your sleeve. So whatever you have, make sure it's very visible and everybody knows about it. Now, for certain industries, there are credentials that are maybe worthless, and there are credentials that are very important. For the very important ones that are going to be a sales bonus and a career bonus for someone, those are the ones you're going to have to struggle through and go get those credentials. The silly, wasteful ones, don't even bother with them.
What is your attitude?
Fields,
excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, in certain fields, there are very specific certifications. If you are a repairman for an air conditioner, perhaps, you want to be certified in whatever the brand of air conditioning system you're doing. And when the company is selling those services, they need to say that. I have all certified blah, blah, blah air conditioning people.
Now, let's talk about social networking for the small business environment. There is all kinds of negative stuff that's been mentioned about it. For the business person, I think it can be very viable, but it's a real learning curve because you have to understand how you're going to use these tools effectively and efficiently. For the average business person, what would you recommend as far as becoming well-versed and educated in this and putting your best professional foot forward?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing any business wants to do is make themselves visible on the internet so that when someone searches for them, their field, their business, they're found. That is the most important thing. So if you need an air conditioner, an air conditioning repairman, you put that in, you put the county that you live in, you want your company to pop up on the screen. So how does that happen? Well, there's a whole scenario how that happens. In order for your name to be higher on the search engine list, you do things like put up a Facebook page and you put things on YouTube and you put up a LinkedIn page and you put up a Twitter account and you put little blog items on. This sounds horrible to people. It's a pain. Mm-hmm. But if you want your name to show up when people are searching for someone, you have to do what you have to do. And you have to either find someone that will do it for you. If you don't want to be found, then you don't do this. But you can't rely on people looking in the phone book and looking for ads when in the middle of the night people are online looking for the service people that they want. I can't remember the last time I found something that wasn't found on the internet. I search for it, I look for it, you look at people's websites and you make a selection. And that's where you want to be and this is how you get there.
This is very important because it's a whole new environment. Communication has been shifting dramatically. Mm-hmm. And what you say is true, and I know a lot of people, and I'm one of them, I say I only have so many hours in the day. I've mm-hmm. got XYZ that is my priority and what I'm looking at for business, per se. How in the world am I going to manage all of this other stuff and do a good job at it? And I think trying to find someone that you can work with to do it for you mm-hmm. really is a plus. If you don't have the time, that is a great way to do it. How would you recommend someone find it? You've got a small business, mid-sized business. Your budget is really, really tight. Where would you recommend that people go to find someone that would be glad to do this kind of service?
Well, I'll mention one thing. There are several books out there and all. I do know of a book called Duct Tape Marketing, which I recommend. And there are people across the country that call themselves duct tape marketing coaches. I have no involvement in this myself. I just have read the book, and I know people that are duct tape marketing coaches. And you can look that up on the internet and look for people that are, say, certified in that area and contact them. That's one thing. Or, you know, look for people that do the service that we're describing. There's plenty of them. Just like anything else, you can find the wrong person or the right person. References are important. If people email me on my website, I will give you references, people's names, but not people that I benefit in any way through my business with, but people that I've used myself. It's just like finding any other type of service provider, an accountant. How do you find a lawyer? How do you find an accountant? Maybe you ask your friends.
Mm-hmm. Very good suggestion. Your book, Six Steps to Creating Profit, covers so many different aspects of the small business person. Again, you've had so many experiences, over 1,000 interactions with businesses of different types. You have a chapter titled Changing the Back Office Focus. I found this very, very interesting because it's dealing with some things that lots of times people are ignoring. You mentioned this sort of at the beginning when we were chatting, that things can, you know, like the computer can take over really boring things we don't want to do, and if your company's big enough, maybe you have a part-time manager or a full-time manager. You've got all of these things. How can we really be sure that we have the accuracy and maintain a standard of excellence that we want with our businesses relative to the back office focus?
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows it's difficult. A top-notch financial person, to me, is extremely important. Someone who's managing your job costing, that you're properly costing your jobs, that your service providers are entering proper time in a time and billing system, so that you know your labor utilization, whether your employees are half utilized for your clients, or two-thirds utilized, or 10% utilized. All of these kind of difficult tasks need to be put in place by someone who's knowledgeable about these things, put in place and then managed. Once they're put in place, managing them could be done by maybe a part-time CFO, part-time controller. It would be better to have a higher level person for less hours than a person who doesn't understand those topics and those processes. Then it will become, you know, rigmarole, and it just gets done maybe not correctly. So this is, it's watching profit is what it is. It's watching the bottom line, keeping your business profitable. It's the most important thing.
It really is. You mention a point person in a business. Who is that point person?
Well, I'm not sure in what chapter you're talking about, but there are point people that you want to point to, that you want to assign for a certain task. Like when I'm doing my appendix, I'm fixing things and changing things. Who are the point people that you're going to use for what areas? You might have an operational person. You might have a financial person. You know, you might have someone in the sales arena. But these people should be the ones that you would delegate to go through the tedious things that need to be changed and find places to make corrections.
You also bring up the internet advertising arena, and Facebook has this available. There are a number of opportunities here, and you say we've really got to watch that, because the smallest of fees, that when we look at it, it's sort of like the $9.95, that little
yes.
95 at the end of a mm-hmm. price tag. You go, oh, I'm saving something, when it really is $10, not $9.95, but and plus when you have tax added to it. This is something very important. Let's cover that quickly.
Sure, and that's the kind of thing I'm mentioning about having a superior person in a job for less hours might be better than having someone that isn't qualified to do this. If you do, say, ads on the internet, pay-per-click type ads, and when someone puts in a search and they say, you know, air conditioner repair person in New York, and the search engine provides a list, well, you also see, we're all used to seeing the ads that come up on the screen, and sometimes those ads look like they're the results of the search, and you click on the top one. If you're clicked on, you're going to pay a fee, like a Google fee. If you don't watch that, you might be clicked on hundreds and hundreds of times, and you might be paying fee, and it might be worthless, because you might want to hone in on a better, maybe geographical area. You have to watch it. You have to look at the results, and you have to see what you really want to be advertising.
Mm-hmm.
You could start out thinking you're going to spend $50 a month, and you could spend $500, or you could spend a lot more. The department stores, you know, they have huge budgets for things like this. So you have to watch it. You just don't set this up and then walk away and come back in a year. You have
mm-hmm.
to look at it.
Yes, and many times, I know with Facebook, you can set your geographic area, which you just mentioned. You
mm-hmm.
can say it's only under certain circumstances that you will pay X, Y, Z, pennies or dollars, whatever it is. And you can really be very specific in setting this up, which I think is excellent in many ways, but you're right. You have to have some kind of a time limit on something, because it will add up like nobody's business. But I do know of some businesses that are using internet advertising, and they're finding that it is, in many ways, they've sort of tweaked it until they've gotten it so that they really can see how, and they've got graphs that they follow. And it's really quite interesting, the responses that they're getting. Let's talk about something that almost all of us have heard about, and that is web conferencing. And this is really becoming a hot item. People don't want to travel, and they're cutting back on travel expenses. Web conferencing has really become good. What are the good, the bad, and the ugly about this?
Well, the best thing is it's immediate. You can be talking to someone on the phone, and if you want to show them something, you can say, go to meeting, and you can click. They can be on the computer with you immediately. And this happens if you're doing business globally, like I have done business with software companies globally. We're in different time zones, and you know, someone that's in England or you know, Israel or anywhere can be as if they're in the same room. Now, you can't match that any other way. Mm-hmm. You can have people all from all over the place on a conference looking at a computer screen. You can, of course, do Skype and see them, and it's just like having a meeting. So this has changed business, of course, radically.
And that does cut down on the cost quite a bit.
Of course. So you can get what you want right now. You can do it right now. You can do it tonight. You don't have to wait for next week or next month. And it's almost free.
Now, webcasts, podcasts, blogging, all of this is, again, something that takes a piece of the time. And I don't know of anybody that's in business for themselves that doesn't gnash their teeth at some time and say, gee whiz, can I please have a day off? When you're an entrepreneur, when you're someone that's in business for yourself, until you reach a point where economically you have that profit margin as you'd like to see it, it's a 24/7. And it's pretty tough for people to wear all the hats.
Well, these days it's about throwing away a lot of the hats and just cutting down, getting to the basics and doing what you have to do and doing it all at once. And, you know, I know a lot of people in business, and my daughter is a judge and an attorney with loads of children, and somehow everything she does can be done on the phone, and then she's free. Like, we have to learn how to do things very quickly, and that's why I like technology, and we all use, you know, we answer the questions right then and there, put the attachment in, get rid of the task, get it over with. Don't save up a list of emails that you have to handle later. You need to learn to behave differently so that you can still have your free time and go out on the golf course and you can still get all your work done. You have to be very proficient.
Mm-hmm.
Easier said than done, but I really feel a lot of the rigmarole needs to be thrown out and not even looked at.
Mm-hmm. And that is a process, because that is a learning curve. When there are so many things that are stated as absolute musts when you're in business, to really get down to getting rid of the fluff stuff, that is a challenge. That really, really is, because you'll look at it and say all of it's important. And that's where you, when you were working with small businesses, would be able to look at things that sometimes they were too close to see.
It's always people are too close to it. I mean, something as simple as don't even reply all when you're doing emails, because then you're going to get 20 or 30 or 40 responses from people. Do you want their responses? I mean, it's very simple things that you can do to isolate yourself and so that you have time to do what you have to do and not do silly, ridiculous things.
Mm-hmm. It is. There's so many things that can distract us. And I agree. I think it is learning how to think differently. I think offices can be set up much more efficiently. I always have to chuckle when I think of the objective that we're going to be a paperless society, and I go, gee whiz, I think I've got more paper than I ever knew before I could have in my office. It's just absolutely amazing. But it is a reality. Well, your book, Six Steps to Creating Profit, has so much good information to it. It is very much to the point. And at the end, you have a checklist, which I found quite interesting. And also, you're asking lots and lots of questions that a small business person or a mid-sized business individuals could ask themselves and go through it question by question. And it would take time, but I'll tell you what, your questions are pretty much to the point.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on many an airplane myself going to a conference, and, you know, you get some information that's very valuable, and you sit there and you're making lists of what you really want to do when you get back to the office and how you're going to change this and that and make things better. I put everything that I knew in the back of that book so everyone could share.
Well, I'll tell you what, it is a very well-done publication. And for those of you that are in business yourself, or if you are wanting to go into business, hey, if you're just going to start up an enterprise, this is a book that you'd want to have in your library, because it's going to give you some wonderful points of information in our world as it is today for technology and other areas that you should be aware of. Patricia Sigman, your website is the David Advisory Group, davidadvisorygroup.com. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Thank you so much for being with me.
It was my pleasure.
And I'm, gee whiz, if you come up with another book, be sure and send it along.
I will.
Thank you very much, Patrick.
Thank you.
Patricia Sigmon, and that's spelled S-I-G-M-O-N, Six Steps to Creating Profit, a Guide for Small and Mid-Sized Service-Based Businesses. Good material. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, telephone lines are open, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you're a first-time listener, all you have to do is call that number, 888-815-9756. We'll answer. And I just want your first name or your initial. I'd love to know where you're calling in from. And then just relax and let me tell you what I see for you. That's right. Just takes a split second, and I'll be giving you information about yourself and your life and maybe some things that are going on in it. And then, of course, you're welcome to ask a question afterwards. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking with a gal that I really admire. Her name is Marcia Shaver. Her book is titled The Artist's Journey. Marcia is a woman that decided she was going to do a hike with a friend through Spain. The story is just fascinating. And she goes through all of these wonderful experiences. And I learned more about how to backpack efficiently and things that you just don't think of. I mean, I'm not likely to be one that's going to have enough time to go through a country as she did. But at the same time, these are all little tips and things that she shares. It was just really quite a good read. So she's also a very fine artist, and so her book is loaded with that. And then we are going to be talking about how the sky is green and the grass is blue with Debbie Scott on Thursday. And then on Friday, Miracles Are Made, Real Life Guide to Autism by Lynette Louise. This is a woman that has raised 8 kids. She has an insight into not just wellness, but a philosophy about life that I just think is absolutely incredible. So we're going to be talking with her on Friday. So great lineup of people. And by the end of this week, I will have all of the information posted for next month's guests, and you will be able to access that. And my newsletter will be coming out as well. Just wanted to touch on a little bit of trivia. Thumbs up and thumbs down. When I was a kid growing up, it wasn't uncommon to see hitchhikers. And I can remember the story about my uncle, Debbie R., who was quite a few years older than me, and how when he was in the Navy, he could never afford to travel by taxi or other things, and so he would always hitchhike. And very rarely did you ever have a situation that was negative, but the attitude of sticking the thumb out, up and out, by golly, that was the name of the game. Now, where did this all come from? How did this particular pattern for hitchhiking start? Well, in our culture, of course, thumbs up is positive, thumbs down, not so good. Well, there is a real understanding with history that this particular pattern of hand and thumb approval, well, we can go back to the Roman times, and of course, they would have it in the arenas at the Colosseum. Are we going to save the gladiator? Thumbs up. If we're going to get rid of him, we put thumbs down. You know, you see it in all the Hollywood movies. Well, apparently, this is what they call fake lore. That's right. And this term, fake lore, comes from the imprecise translation of a Latin term called polis verso, with a turned thumb, as with a thumb turned down. Now, there is a second century writer whose name was Juvenal, and it was indeed with polis verso that arena spectators would condemn those that they didn't like. But they didn't know whether verso meant turned up, turned down, or turned away. So apparently the turned down thumb is not that old. It's only a couple hundred years old. It was popularized by a French classical painter, Léon Gérôme. And this came about in 1873. He painted an emperor making a thumbs down gesture. That's right. It came from a painting. Fascinating stuff. Sometimes I wonder how people have the time to do all the research on this. But so many things are adopted so quickly. It reminds me of a story, and this is something that I've heard in various expressions through the years, but it's a story about a little girl in a kitchen with her mom, and her mom is fixing a pot roast. And as she's fixing this pot roast, the little girl notices that mom is cutting off the edge of the pot roast. And she looks at her mom, because her mom just takes a piece of meat and puts it aside. And she asks her mom, "Mom, why are you cutting off the end of the pot roast?" Well, her mother said, "I don't know, but I have been fixing pot roast this way for I don't know how many years. I learned it from your grandma. And my pot roasts turn out perfectly when I do exactly what she did." Well, the day came when the little girl was able to go visit her grandmother. And this incident in the kitchen, in her young mind, with her mom, just didn't make sense. So she figured Grandma could tell her exactly the reason for cutting off the end of the roast. Well, she asked her grandmother, and her grandmother just started laughing. And she looked at her grandmother, and she said, "Grandma, why are you laughing? Mom does this. I don't understand why you're laughing at me." And her grandmother said, "Sweetie, I'm not laughing at you. I am laughing at the fact that your mother is cutting off the pot roast." She said, "The only reason I ever cut off the edge of the pot roast is that my pan was too small." So the point is, we adopt some things not realizing that there may be a circumstance like a pot being too small or a pan being too small for baking a pot roast, so Grandma goes and cuts it off, to the realization that Mom didn't have to have that. She didn't need to trim anything. All she had to do was put the pot roast in the pot that it fit. But that's what we do. So just a little tidbit of history regarding the thumbs down image and where it came from. I think history is always fascinating. And I really think there's so many things that have been carried on by generation after generation after generation. And so much of it just nobody questions it. It's just, well, this is the way it's been done for the last 5,050 years. Well, maybe it's time to make a shift. You know, our guest today was talking about businesses and how we have to do some changes. And that's a truth. And, you know, in our time frame, just in the last 10 years. The evolution of technology, it's mind-boggling. I absolutely am astonished. And what is even more astonishing to me is how much more rapidly it's moving forward. I was on the phone with someone today, and we were talking about medical technology and how in the area of medicine that now there are tests that can be done, things that can evaluate body chemistry. There is so much that's heading into a very, very complex yet simplified form of being able to diagnose people. And my friend that I was talking with, she said, remember the Star Trek movie where Bones was in a hospital and a woman was on a gurney and they were getting ready to take her into surgery? She was dying. Bones takes his little handy-dandy unit and says, well, this is all you need, gives her two pills, comes back through later on. She's saying, it's a miracle, it's a miracle. It's all in what we know. And my friend and I were just joking about this, but this is what it's evolving to. And it comes about because we have, at this time in the history, so many wonderful people that have the capacity for thinking and moving ahead, and we have some technology that's very supportive of them. For thousands and thousands of years, it wasn't available. Now it is. And it's very exciting. It really is very exciting. So it's a good time to be alive, I think. For all of the stuff that goes on, we've got more opportunity to do good and to have a life that not only is rich for ourselves, but also for people around the world. It is available, and it is also encouraging communication. It's breaking down barriers of ignorance, fear, and superstition that have been prevalent for a long time. But that's why we have to be good custodians, because there are those that would like to manipulate, control, and take away your right of free thought. Well, the 4th of July is coming up. We're going to take a break in just a bit. Don't go away. I've got other good things to share with you. 888-815-9756 if you would like to chat with me today. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I wanted to share some information since the first part of the show was about small business. I wanted to share something with you that I had come across regarding making money, and I just realized that I had wanted to do this with you. Aha, here it is. I've got it. Now, this was a book by a guest that I had just recently, 101 Ways to Enhance a Career. In here is an article by Stephen Cabral, and I really liked what this man had to say. Again, it's thinking differently, and if you're wanting to generate an income, regardless of what your business is, he had some pretty good suggestions about what he called his 7-step success blueprint to building a 6-figure business. And his words, I think, are worth sharing with you. And he said this is a step-by-step process. He said it's tried and true, and people have been using this for decades with really good success. Now, he just discovered it a few years ago, and he said, I wasn't doing it right, but I fine-tuned it, and I know I will never have to worry about making money again. Now, this is the information, and I'm giving it to you directly from the article that he wrote. It's a 7-step success blueprint to building a 6-figure business in under 1 year's time. Now, he said, this is what you do. Now, he said the reason he wanted to do it, let me sidetrack for just a minute. He said a lot of people are just going to ignore this. They're going to say, nah, sounds too good to be true. He said, I'm giving it to you because when you become successful, it's very important that you pass your wisdom along to others. All right. He said, one of the worst ways, here we go. One of the worst ways to get new clients is to look desperate by going after them and asking them to buy from you. No one wants to do business with someone that he or she doesn't perceive as already having an established business or clientele. So, you need to establish yourself as an expert. And the best way to do that is to write your own book, have it published. Now, if you're a person who goes, oh, my heart stopped when you said that, I don't think I'd ever write a book. He said you need to reframe your beliefs about what a book actually is and how you should be using it to promote your new business. He says a lot of people believe they need to sit down and write a 400- to 500-page novel, but that's not what you need. No one has the time anymore to do that, generally. And very few people have the time to sit down and read. Very few people are like me, where they will read 300- or 400-page books. They're just not going to do it. People want their information in a 100- to 200-page publication, period. And you want to write a how-to or information-based publication that will help the client you want or the customer you want to gain new knowledge on a topic he or she is trying to find answers to. And there's many easy ways to put a book together. You can speak into a recorder and have the audio transcribed very inexpensively, or you could just write a series of short articles or steps outlining how to accomplish a specific goal that your customer has in mind. There you go. Also, don't publish a book to make money. Doesn't happen. The goal is to actually get your new publication into as many people's hands as possible so they can read your material and view you as the expert in your field. Now, here are the 7 steps. Step 1, offer a free or low-cost self-published book, CD, or DVD. Step 2, provide new and useful content to your ideal customer niche. Step 3, price the product you'll be selling at the end of your book according to your niche's price threshold. Lower-end markets typically start at 47, and higher-end coaching groups range all the way from $10,000 to $25,000. 4, offer an email address or web link for more information on your product or coaching program on the last page of your book so customers can contact you for purchases. 5, deliver your product digitally right through your website, mail a hard product to your new customer, or deliver your phone coaching sessions on Skype. 6, figure out how many sales you'll need to make, $100,000 a year, or whatever your goal is. And 86 sales a month of $97 of product equals $100,000 a year with no additional work on your part. That's only 2.7 sales a day. If you sold a higher-end coaching program for $497, you'd only need 17 sales a month. And if you sold a program where the investment was $297 a month for 3 months, you would only need 9.5 sales a month to make $100,000 a year. Possibilities? Definitely. Last step. When you multiply the formula I just laid out for you with additional product lines or service offerings, your profit potential is limitless. And all you have to do is the math to calculate how many sales you would need to create a $250,000, $500,000, or a $1 million-plus business. And what this gentleman said, he said, don't believe for a second that you can't do it. You can. Your new $100,000 business awaits you, and I truly hope my article served as a blueprint for you to begin. Remember, too, that if you use the formula I just outlined, then you will have the clients coming directly to you already sold on your products and services, and that's the easiest and greatest type of business in the world. Now, if you'd like to have information on this, this is his website. It's CabralSuccessSolutions.com. That's C-A-B like boy, R-A-L, SuccessSolutions.com. That's his business, is helping other people become wealthy. And that's all you have to do is go to his website, check it out. So you have all seven steps right there. Fascinating stuff, don't you think? I think so. This is Donna Sebo. We've got a few more minutes here, and give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. One of the ways to alleviate stress, it's drawing, or better yet, drawing. Now, whenever you're down in the dumps, if you pick up a pen or a pencil and start sketching a sunrise, flowers, birds, anything that makes you feel good, like the face of a sun and bright beams going out of it, it works. It shifts the mindset. It really makes a difference, just like seeing certain colors shifts the mindset. Boston University did a study, and they had a bunch of grumpy volunteers. I guess they had an abundance of them at the college, the university, and so they were drawing positive images, and the moods they were in shifted very quickly, whatever they were doing. And they said they ended up being much happier and much more upbeat than another group who was part of this study, who would vent their feelings by drawing images about what was bothering them. They created pretty, inspiring pictures that distract them totally from the cause of their grumpiness, their bad mood. When you focus on what is not working, and let's say you're having money problems. You're going, I'm so broke. I just can never see anything. Nothing's ever going to be any better. I don't have anything. I don't have a pot to pee in. I don't have this. I don't have that. That's where you're putting all of your energy. So when you shift it and you say, well, I may not have a whole bunch of money in my pocket, but gee, I've got these beautiful flowers I'm looking at through my office window, or I love the sunshine of the day, or wow, I've got so much to be grateful for. You put your attention where you want it to be, so that you give your energy to what really, really works. And that is so important. That is so important. And I've known this for years, and I have to remind myself about it, because it's so easy to get caught up in a moment that maybe is not working. Remember, this is the now. This is where you are. So to make the best out of where you are is going to give you the power you need to move forward. Nobody gets through life by tapping the light fantastic and going, ta-da! No, it doesn't work that way. There are days when even heavy doses of chocolate won't work. It's just a stinking day. So try to make, or a moment, try to look at how you can shift. Take control of that. Take dominion over your mind and your attitudes. It makes such a difference. And if you find yourself around some people that all they do is grumble, mumble, and tell you how bad everything is, give them 5 seconds worth of your time and then move on to something else. If you're better with your own company, quiet and meditating, or enjoying some beautiful music, whatever it is, remember your life belongs to you, not to somebody else. It belongs to you. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight having you with me today. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, we're going to be doing the Life Fantastic with a woman that traveled through Spain. I hope you can join me. She's a dynamic lady. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.